This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikagna Jujaba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There's trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena. On today's show, we have House Representative Mary Kunish Podin, Robert Lilligren, Heather Keeler. Also, we have Wendy Pilot, Nancy Bolio, and Joey Peltier. Let's start the show with the news with Oglema.
Buju, everyone. Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. My name is Oglema Ganuikwe. Today is Saturday, September 19th, 2020. I'm here with some news and updates from Turtle Island this week. Yesterday, Supreme Court Justice and champion of gender equality Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. She was 87 years old. Known throughout the nation as the notorious RBG, Ginsburg leaves behind an impressive legacy of law and dissent. Known for her fiery dissents and consistent rulings on equality for the genders, she passed on the eve of the Jewish New Year. Just days before her death and a little more than 6 weeks ahead of the election, Ginsburg told her granddaughter, Clara Spera, that her most fervent wish was to not be replaced until a new president is installed. According to CNN, Barack Obama spoke on the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and encouraged her wish to be fulfilled. Obama, in a statement mourning Ginsburg, called for Senate Republicans to uphold the standard they set in 2016 when they blocked his nominee. Over a long career on both sides of the bench, as a relentless litigator and incisive jurist, Justice Ginsburg helped us to see that discrimination on the basis of sex isn't about an abstract ideal of equality, that it doesn't only harm women, that it has real consequences for all of us. It's about who we are and who we can be, Obama said in his statement. He also added, Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought hard to the end, through her cancer, with unwavering faith in our democracy and its ideals. That's how we remember her. But she also left instructions for how she wanted her legacy to be honored. 4.5 years ago, when Republicans refused to hold a hearing or an up or down vote on Merrick Garland, they invented the principle that the Senate shouldn't fill an open seat on the Supreme Court before a new president was sworn in. A basic principle of the law and everyday fairness is that we apply rules with consistency and not based on what's convenient or advantageous in that moment. Chief Justice John Roberts said in a statement, "Our nation has lost a jurist of historic stature, and we at the Supreme Court have lost a cherished colleague. Today we mourn, but with the confidence that future generations will remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg as we knew her, a tireless and resolute champion of justice." Ginsburg was appointed to the Supreme Court by then-President Bill Clinton in 1993. She was the second woman to be appointed to the Supreme Court, following the only previous woman who served, Sandra Day O'Connor, who was appointed by the Reagan administration in 1981. O'Connor served until 2006, when she retired, but Ginsburg had said many times over her five-year battle with cancer that she would not retire as long as she could still maintain her duties. When Ginsburg spoke at Georgetown University in 2015 about being one of the only women on the Supreme Court, she said, "When I'm sometimes asked when there will be enough women on the Supreme Court, I say, when there are nine." People are shocked, but there have been nine men, and nobody's ever raised a question about that. A small, private funeral is planned at Arlington Cemetery later this week. She is survived by her two grandchildren, six grandchildren, and one great-grandchild this week for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is survived by her two children, six grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. In recent news regarding the 2016 Standing Rock actions, a federal civil rights class action lawsuit will continue. Dundon versus Kirchmeyer was filed by nine named plaintiffs on behalf of hundreds of no DAPL water protectors who were injured by law enforcement on the night of November 20th of 2016. According to Indian Country Today, on that night, water protectors had peacefully assembled at Backwater Bridge on Route 1806, just north of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation and within the boundaries of the Seven Council Fires or Great Sioux Nation treaty lands in North Dakota. Thousands of water protectors from many different indigenous nations were camped nearby seeking to stop the pipeline from being built under the Missouri River, which is sacred to the Great Sioux Nation and provides drinking water to thousands of indigenous people. Without giving any warnings or opportunity to disperse, officers fired on the unarmed water protectors with impact munitions, explosive flashbang grenades, chemical weapons, and high-pressure water hoses in freezing temperatures for over 8 hours. At least 200 water protectors were injured and dozens were hospitalized. In April of 2018, the law enforcement defendants asked the federal court to dismiss the lawsuit based on a number of affidavits, press releases, and other materials in which they claimed that the use of force was justified. On Thursday, September 10th of 2020, United States District Court Judge Daniel Traynor of the District of North Dakota allowed the lawsuit challenging law enforcement's 2016 use of fire hoses and munitions against water protectors opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline to move forward with discovery. The case had been stalled for more than 2 years because of the aforementioned law enforcement defendants and others filing a motion asking the court to dismiss the case. Lawyer Myra Verheiden-Hilliard of the Partnership of Legal Justice Fund and a member of the Water Protector Legal Collective litigation team told Indian Country Today, "We are litigating this case not only on behalf of the water protectors whose rights were so viciously violated at Standing Rock, but for the constitutional rights of all people coming into the streets, fighting for climate and racial justice as our planet is in flames and paramilitary forces attack peaceful protesters across the land." While there are nine plaintiffs in the lawsuit, the most prominent being Vanessa Dundon, the lawsuit is for all people injured by police during the Standing Rock protest. For more information, please reach out to the Water Protector Legal Collective. In news of Breonna Taylor, the Black woman and EMT shot by Louisville police while sleeping in her home on March 13th of 2020, the city of Louisville has settled the case for $12 million, according to CNN. In addition to the settlement, the city has also agreed to institute police reforms. Mayor Greg Fisher, Taylor's family, and their attorneys announced the settlement at a joint press conference on Tuesday. As part of the settlement, the city agreed to establish a housing credit program as an incentive for officers to live in the areas where they serve, use social workers to provide support on certain police runs, and require commanders to review and approve search warrants before seeking judicial approval, among other changes. "Justice for Breonna means that we will continue to save lives in her honor," said Tamika Palmer, Taylor's mother. "No amount of money accomplishes that, but the police reform measures that we were able to get passed as a part of this settlement mean so much more to my family, our community, and to Breonna's legacy." A spokeswoman for the mayor's office confirmed to CNN that the $12 million settlement is the highest ever paid by the city. Family attorney Benjamin Crump called the payout historic and said that he believed it is one of the largest amounts ever paid out for a Black woman killed by police in the U.S. Mayor Fisher said that the city is not admitting wrongdoing in the agreement. Breonna Taylor's death has been a part of the ongoing Black Lives Matter movement and protests in Louisville and across the country against anti-Black racism and police violence, and those have continued for more than 6 months since her death. In June, the police chief in charge at the time of her murder was fired after a separate police shooting, and the Louisville City Council passed Breonna's Law, which banned no-knock search warrants. None of the officers involved in the shooting have been charged with a crime. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, the first black person to hold the post, was made a special prosecutor on the case earlier this year, and the FBI has opened an investigation as well. On Tuesday, Breonna's family attorney Ben Crump, attorney Lenita Baker, and Breonna's mother Tamika Palmer continued to push for criminal charges against the officers involved. In state and local news, both presidential candidates for the upcoming election in November visited Minnesota yesterday. The city of Bemidji was host to a campaign rally for Donald Trump's re-election. Supporters gathered at Bemidji Aviation Services to hear a speech and vocalize their support for Trump's re-election. Meanwhile, the former vice president toured a carpenter training center with union officials in Hermantown, a northeast suburb of Duluth. The two candidates were visiting concurrently in different parts of the state. According to various news sources, during Trump's Bemidji rally, a shout was heard saying, "Ginsburg just died," in an apparent effort to alert Trump to the justice's passing. Trump continued speaking and was then briefed on his way back to the plane immediately after the rally. Upon hearing the news, Trump is quoted as saying, "She just died? Wow, I didn't know that." He also added that she was an amazing woman who led an amazing life, whether you agree or not. And he also said that he was actually sad to hear of her passing. As a reminder, the 2020 census is coming to an end on September 30th, which means that if you have not yet submitted a response, you do need to do so before the end of September. Please go online to 2020census.gov if you have not yet completed your census. As always, remember to wear a mask, wash your hands, and get out and vote in November. Back to you, Wakanja Hade.
Pinigigi Ogma, for all you do, these are great updates. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We are always happy to get a check-in from Robert Lilligren. Welcome, Robert. Tell us who you're with and what's going on today.
Yeah, bonjour, Nindimimaganaduk. I'm Robert Lilligren, citizen of the White Earth Ojibwe Nation, and I work at the Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, that leads the American Indian Culture Corridor efforts on East Franklin. I'm also chair of the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, a 50-year-old leadership forum here in the metro area of several dozen Native organizations, and I'm a member of our regional government, our Metropolitan Council. I was appointed by Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, to represent the core city of Minneapolis in the region.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so can you give us a quick update of what's happening in the Wall of Forgotten Natives Part 2?
Yeah, so since the reoccupation of the Wall, and I really give the community credit for taking that strategic move, and it was in some parts supported by our Native outreach workers who work directly with our unsheltered relatives. And a couple of weeks ago, when the city of Minneapolis cleared off a site that they own in South Minneapolis, just off the American Indian Cultural Corridor, they didn't have anywhere for people to go. And so the decision was made by the residents to reoccupy the Wall. And so it's much like the occupation back in 2018, feels a lot the same. And I got to tell you, Robert, one thing that it shows, and it's very disappointing, is that as a system here in Minneapolis and the metropolitan area, we have made very little progress in how to best serve our unsheltered relatives. And winter's coming, the weather's getting cooler, and it seems like every year we're back wringing our hands, wondering what we're going to do so so people don't freeze to death living outside in the winter. And so many parts of the community have mobilized to support our relatives at the wall. We're working with partners like Avivo and the outreach workers from Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, outreach workers from the American Indian Community Development Corporation, to get as many people inside as quickly as possible. And that part's going a little smoother this time. But for me, having been sort of recruited into these conversations about how to build a better system to address unsheltered homelessness in our region and our state, it's really disappointing to see how little progress we've actually made.
So it's almost like the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz pointing in a couple directions, like they're responsible. No, they're responsible, right?
That is such a good image. I'm going to start using that one. The other images I use, and I learned this from our lieutenant governor, my wife and sister Peggy Flanagan, is a game of not it. I call it jurisdictional not it. Not it, not it.
No.
Or the other image
you're
I use.
You're showing your age
of,
on that
I
one.
Know. Or a game of Foursquare, you know, where you bounce the ball away from yourself.
Oh,
you know, but I like the Scarecrow image. I think I needed a new image, and he just gave me one. So, miigwech for that.
Yeah, so it's sad, but we're moving some out to some indoor housing. There's a percentage of the people from the Wall of Forgotten Natives have had some services and brought out to a first ring suburb. Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's beyond a first ring suburb. But yeah, Avivo had some inventory, some space in their inventory. It's kind of the hotel to homes model. And I'm not as sure about the details. I'm not that involved in it. But I do know, so midweek, week before last, so we were at 76 tents, 100 residents. And so there's a good sort of census taken of those folks. And under the leadership of Minnesota Indian Men's Resource Center and their outreach folks, I think this last week they housed somewhere around 70 of those people. But part of the issue is as soon as some people leave, more people arrive. And so the wall, I'll remind folks, is Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, property, MnDOT right of way. And so they're involved in trying to figure out how to support our relatives there into better, safer places, and also what to do with that space in the long term.
Is there anything, like, I know we don't want people bringing their dirty laundry and food that they don't want, but is there places or a specific place where people can donate to help our relatives?
You know, we're trying to put together a system like we did in 2018. We're getting some cooperation or at least outreach from some of the public jurisdictions like the city and others. Very few resources are coming with that outreach, unfortunately. We're trying to put that kind of donation system into place. And I will say in 2018, that became quite a heavy burden for the Native orgs, because people would bring anything, useless things to the camp. And so trying to manage that was difficult. I will say this, my sense is this time around, the wall is not going to stay occupied as long. And so we'll see what efforts are. But where I would look, if people are interested, is on Facebook. And if you look at the Wall of Forgotten Natives 2020, just sort of search that on Facebook, the outreach workers from Minnesota Indian Men's Resource Center have been cataloging needs and things like that. And so that's the one spot that's up and running right now.
For sure. Hey, I know you're doing some other stuff with Minneapolis. Could you let our audience know like the rebuilding and the organization that you're dealing with right now and working with?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And so I was invited into the Minneapolis City Government, City Hall's strategic process for directing economic development dollars into communities post-civil unrest, post COVID. And of course, as no surprise to any of us, the impacts are felt differently on different communities. And so people of color, indigenous people, are feeling the impacts the hardest. Mm-hmm. And so the powers that be at the city of Minneapolis understand that it's an opportunity here to engage these communities that have been traditionally left out of the economic equation. And so they brought together a group, a strategic group called Minneapolis Forward. We're working in sort of 8 different strategic areas, rapidly developing strategies to best engage all of our communities in Minneapolis in the recovery, to really put that community voice, to center that community voice, that community experience in reinvestment.
Yeah, I'm glad it's about the community and we don't have like more super targets and things like that moving in. And because of the upheaval in Minneapolis and Lake Street, there's a lot of businesses that are mom-and-pop businesses that need help.
That's exactly right. And that's a huge objective of these strategies, is to make sure that the local people are benefiting from reinvestment, are part of the reinvestment. And even since way back in my days on Minneapolis City Council, that is has been a primary objective of mine. I spent 36 years living in Phillips, just watching large corporate interests come in and sort of sweep the local people away when they were ready to reinvest in an area that had been made ripe for reinvestment because of neglect from the public sector. And so here's an opportunity to reframe that a little. And I'll tell you, Robert, one of the things that I really lift up and I encourage everyone to lift up, and especially our Indigenous brothers and sisters, is that kind of consistent with the historic invisibility of Native people, Native people are at risk of being kind of left out of this equation. And as you know well, our communities have stepped up during the civil unrest, and the AIM protectors really help protect Franklin Avenue in that area. The Little Earth protectors continue to protect Little Earth.
Yeah.
And so we didn't experience the level of destruction and damage that a lot of other communities did. We protected our people, our assets. We protected our neighbors, our non-Native neighbors, their assets. And because we didn't burn down, now there's this risk that we'll be left out of reinvestment. So I really encourage folks to lift up this idea. You know, things weren't all that great for Native people before the unrest. And because we had capacity, because we were able to protect our people and our assets, doesn't mean we don't deserve the same level of reinvestment and rebuilding.
Well, we're lucky to have you speak for our people, Robert. I really appreciate you spending some time with us and letting the people around Turtle Island and the Twin Cities know what's happening in Minneapolis. I really appreciate you being on.
I appreciate being asked.
All right, have a great day. You're listening. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Robert Lilligren of NACI, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week we have a great update from House Representative Mary Kunish Podien. Let's take a listen.
How matake ape. It's State Representative Mary Kunish Podien running to be the next senator in District 41. And it is September 18th, 2020, and it is a cool, brisk autumn evening. What an incredible change we're starting here this season. Before we start, I just want us all to maybe take a minute and think about all those fires that are raging over on the West Coast. Acres and acres of land being burned up by out-of-control fires. Folks losing their life, homes, businesses, just a total decimation. And while back in the day, our ancestors were able to control those fires and use those fires to be a good way to manage the lands, we have gotten away from that, the ability to manage fire for a good thing. And so as the acres and the smoke and the aftermath of these fires incur great hardship and damage, death and pain to so many people on the West Coast. Let's all take a minute and hope that they will burn themselves out and rebuilding will begin very soon. I have a brother who is a fire chief out there. And while he's not in the fires, he's a veteran of some pretty major fires. He has some pretty horrific and pretty sad stories to tell us. So let's hope that clears up, that the airs clear up, that the land can rebuild and be reborn again after this fire. This week was a beautiful week. It was our second week of school. I hope distance learning is going well for most of you with children. If you are a teacher, thank you, thank you, thank you for doing this. It's not an easy job to pivot from being a classroom teacher and face-to-face with kids to now doing it virtually and encouraging kids and enticing kids and inspiring kids to learn, because we know that education is one of the biggest equalizers, especially for our American Indian communities that have been left behind for so long. And so if you know of a Native kid that is struggling, that is in need of something, reach out and help them and encourage them and let them know that there's a bright future waiting for them out there. One of the things that I was able to do this week was to gather with our Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force. All of us gathered together and started to review our preliminary report that is due to the legislature coming up in December. I have to thank Nicole Martin Rogers and Virginia Pendleton, who are with the Wilder Research. They have put together an incredible report. It's just the rough draft, but I'm blown away by it. I have to thank Nigel Perot and Kate Weeks over at the Department of Justice. And who else am I? There's somebody else I need to thank, but I'll come up with it. The Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force was an idea that I thought of about 4 years ago and brought to the legislature. And lo and behold, within 2 years of introducing it, we were able to pass legislation and get funding to create this task force. And it was just 1 year ago, I think 1 year ago tomorrow, the 19th, that we were able to bring the task force together, all the different commissioners and members together, and have that really inspirational signing of the legislation with Governor Walz. And of course, our Lieutenant Governor Flanagan was there, had a meaningful prayer by Great Grandma Lyons. And then we got down to business. We started right there and started working on this Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force. And I know that there are legislation all over the country that reflects some of the things that we are doing. Other states are doing things a little differently. Some are watching us. Many are watching us. They want to see this report. And when it does come out, it'll be probably, you know, one of the broadest and most in-depth reports for a state to have done. And so we have been looking at the root causes of the injustice against our missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And of course, that extends to boys and men and our two spirits. And we know that those roots, those original roots, came right from colonization, racism, and the sexual objectification of Indigenous women and girls. There was historically sort of this romanticized vision of a young, curvaceous, beautiful, almond-eyed, brown skin, long, black, glossy-haired Native woman. And that became very, very romanticized, to the point where we know that sex trafficking and violence became prevalent for our Native communities. And that was only exacerbated over the internet, the extractive industries, and of course, unfortunately, hotels and casinos, sporting events, hunting, all of those things, wherever large group of men gathered, we know that this was happening. There might be folks that will say, well, show us the data, prove this is happening, prove it was so bad. But therein lies the biggest problem. We don't have the data to say that. We can't say for the last 100 years we have lost X amount of women. We can't say that over the last 50 to 10 years our Two-Spirit folks have been going missing and are victims of extreme violence, because so much of the data was never collected. A lot of times intentionally, a lot of times just because there was no interest in it, and because there were people that didn't want that kind of information put down on paper and for others to see. And so we know that our Indigenous women get murdered and go missing at higher rates than any other group. And so many of the factors within our communities are the risk factors. Of course, our child welfare system has never been favorable for our children. They are removed from the home more than any other group, often for minimal reasons, often for no reasons. Historically, we know that churches were quick to remove children from the home and put them into religious schools and boarding schools. Domestic violence became very, very serious as our communities were torn apart and the cultural morals and mores were destroyed. We know that, again, our Indigenous folks are incarcerated at higher levels, especially our women are incarcerated at higher levels than any other group. And they have longer sentences and very little bit of rehab or reconnection with the community once they've been released. And too often our women and our community members have had to resort to prostitution and trafficking just for survival. And those are some of the things that we have started to identify and discuss and look at. And so our biggest task will be to come up with some solutions, some suggestions for the state legislature, how we can address the systemic causes behind the disproportionate violence experienced by our Indigenous women and girls. How are we going to, with fidelity and intentionality, collect and report data on violence against Indigenous women and girls? How are we going to address policy and practices within our institution, our state, our local, our municipal institutions that impact the violence against our Indigenous women and communities? And really and truly, we want to make sure that we are reducing and eventually eliminating the violence against our Indigenous community. But that doesn't end there, because we have to make sure we have safety nets there. We have resources to help the women and the girls who are victims and survivors. And it's not just them, but it is the family that suffers. It's the communities that suffer. And so we will look and come up with some suggestions, again, how to prevent and heal from violence that has been so historically devastating. That might sound kind of like a downer, but it was actually an incredible conversation. We were together all day long, and I think we could have spent all night long talking about that. And so stay tuned. I will bring you more information. Well, today is the 18th of September, and that means it is the first day of voting. You can begin voting as of today. You can register and then do an online ballot and send it in and track it. You can vote, of course, by mail. You can vote in person. If you are military or overseas, you can vote from where you are. You can track your absentee ballot, and you can find your county election office at one easy site, and that is our Secretary of State's website. There is just an incredible amount of information there. And for our friends that speak Spanish and Hmong and Somali and so many other languages, they have it all translated there for you, because we're all good Minnesotans and we all need to vote. I know that in the past, our Indian communities have been reluctant or have been lackadaisical when it comes to voting. But as I say, you need to look at who's representing you and are they doing the kind of representation that reflects the needs and the wants and the best interests of our community, our Indigenous community, our local communities. And if that person is not, then I would say it is your moral obligation to vote. And vote them out and vote in the people that are really going to make the positive change, the positive difference. Because it's up to you, folks. It's up to all of us. So go to the Secretary of State's website, www.sos.state.mn.us/elections-voting. And get yourself registered, get yourself a ballot, go in early to vote when you're in town. Please vote and vote for people that are going to have your best interest in mind. I'm over time already, I can see. So and hoping you enjoy this brisk autumn evening. I don't know if ricing is over, but if it hasn't completed, be safe out there. Be good to each other. Wopala Tonka.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. We try to reach out each week to Red Dawn and South Dakota State Representative. And we are excited to catch her this week. Thank you so much for being on Native Roots Radio.
Good morning. Great to be on.
So I'd love to have an update of what's going on in South Dakota. I know that we have an election coming up, the census. Minnesota's the tribes here are really need to push out the census. Our numbers are really low right now. How are things in South Dakota?
Well, we're pushing hard for both the census and voter registration. We have 33 days or less than 30 days for voter registration and less than 2 weeks to get out the census. So there's a lot of emphasis on that. We're calling people, encouraging them to complete both forms and also emphasizing the importance of it. Because as you know, the census impacts a lot of our funding. And if you go to the reservation, there's a major housing shortage. And a lot of that has to do with our lack of infrastructure funding. So it's so very important. So we're continuing to push that. And, our election, our campaigning is in full force. You have myself running for Senate for District 27, as well as Pree Puir and Ernest Weston for House in District 27. So it's exciting that we, in our district, we have a chance of having all three seats filled by Oglala. So
wow.
You know, it's an exciting time. Yes. And they're great candidates. We're doing well.
That's beautiful. And really, I mean, that's stunning and beautiful. And it's just the beginning. And you're a part of opening the doors for our young people and other relatives running for office. That's just a great, great thing. Can we get some kind of website or how we can support you? I'd like to have everybody on Turtle Island be able to support you and other ways to support you. If you have phone banking or anything like that, I'd like you to tell our audience about that, please.
Oh, yeah. So we'll be putting information out about phone banking. And I'm on Act Blue for Red Dawn Foster for SD Senate. And Red Dawn Foster, SD Senate on Act Blue.
Cool. And we'll put that up on Native Roots Radio, too. One of the things that I'm also really excited about and to talk to you about is your cousin, Red Fawn, who is just released from prison and, a political prisoner. And don't let anybody fool you or kid you that that's what it was. And I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, but I feel like she was set up at Standing Rock, and it's so great to have her out now. Do you have any updates on your cousin?
Yeah, so she's been released from federal prison, and she has been transferred to a halfway house. And so she's not quite completely free, but she's no longer in prison, so that's a relief. And she's getting settled in at the halfway house, and continuing to work towards her nonprofit that she's creating that will be focused around intergenerational healing. So just continuing to read, research, work. She's establishing her board right now. And if people want to learn more about it, they can go to freeredfawn.com and learn about her story and other ways that they can help support her.
Wow.
It's been a tremendous journey for her, yes.
Yes, and it's powerful. You know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And she's come out, like you said, all the studying, and she's made this a positive thing while she was incarcerated. So we're really, really excited. We should send her a laptop so she can join us on the symposiums. That's what we should do.
Oh, she would definitely greatly appreciate that.
Well, we'll have to look into that. I'm dead serious about that. So what else is going on here? We got a few more minutes. I know you're busy. What's happening in South Dakota? You know, how's the registration going? I know you're looking strong and being reelected. And how are other things looking in South Dakota?
Well, you know, this election is very important, not just locally, but with the passing, you know, the nation's mm-hmm. in mourning with the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And mm-hmm. so that puts emphasis on how much more important that this election is, because there'll be once again a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court that will be appointed during this next term. So it's very important. You know, politics are always local, but also it's huge, huge. Everything that's going on nationally, we want to definitely get everyone across the nation, Turtle Island, to get out the vote, because there's a lot weighing on this election.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's just to give your quick website and how we can support you again, and get information about how we can physically help you. Could you please do that again?
Yeah. People can add me on Facebook at Red Dawn, and then Act Blue. If you go to Act Blue, they can put in Red Dawn Foster for SD Senate. Thank you again. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and any last words before I let you go?
Well, just get out the vote in the census, because it makes a difference, and we want to make sure that we're counted. Our voice is important.
Peenigie, that's a Red Dawn Foster. State Representative of South Dakota and a proud Ogala. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
It's a good day to be Indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive, because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. All things are our relatives, what we do to everything we do to ourselves. All is one. Black Elk. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many years. She is a volunteer Minnesota State Council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. You know, and also it's awesome to have this, our sacred animal portion of the show with Wendy. Peenigie, Wendy, and thank you for being on as always.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure as always. My name is Hanajihihani, and that means cares for them. And as always, thank you, Uncle Curtis, for that name. Before I get started talking about animals, I just wanted to really say how sad I am today after learning that Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed last night. And I just think it's just a horrible loss for women and humanity. And I just want to, you know, wish, you know, send my help, my thoughts to her family and her daughter and granddaughter. I just think it's a really sad thing. And I'm just hoping that nobody replaces her until after the election. I think so far we have two Republicans saying, oh, we have four.
Yeah,
awesome.
We have four. But I just saw a post from the president, and he's going to pick a replacement right away.
Of course
so
he is.
The battle's okay. going to begin.
All right. Well, rest in peace, Ruth. So what I have here is a article about the Humane Society of the United States, and they are deployed right now in Florida in the wake of Hurricane Sally. excuse me, my voice is a little scratchy today. So Escambia County, Florida, that's in Pensacola, responders from the Humane Society of the United States are on the ground right now there responding to the needs of animals in the wake of Hurricane Sally. The HSUS received a request for search and rescue assistance from Escambia County as the region is experiencing historic flooding. Responders from Humane Rescue Alliance are also providing assistance alongside the HSUS. So, you know, I always thought that when there's a disaster, HSUS just got their stuff together and went there. But that's not the case. They need to be asked to go. You know, I mean, there's lots of organizations out there in different states who can do this, right? So Florida has the Humane Rescue Alliance there. And if HSUS just went in and, you know, the takeover, they don't want to do that. So they're asked and they go willingly whenever they are asked. One of the things is I don't think they've ever been asked to go to California, because I think California really has a really good amount of rescue teams and animal people out there. So, but
and
I'm
they
not positive
to be used
about
to it with all the fires lately
gosh,
in the last few years.
It's just horrible. So responders in the field are certified in swift water and slack water rescue and are able to respond in floodwaters and safely remove animals in need of rescue in the aftermath of Hurricane Sally. So swift water rescue is just what it sounds like. It's rapids, right? White water rapids or fast-moving rapids where they're using different kinds of equipment and ropes. And also slack water rescue is also just high water rescue that's not moving, but they're using boats to go get the... I had to look that up. They're getting boats to get those animals out. So these people are certified and trained in this. And one of the things on my bucket list, I don't know if I'll ever get to do it, but is to be trained like that and to do a go to a spot and do rescue. So
wow.
I don't know if
I'll
ever
miss
be able
you.
To
what
do
the
that.
Heck?
Yeah, I know, but I'm, you know, old and I need to get strong to be able to do that. So, quote, our rescue team is on the ground in the aftermath of Hurricane Sally to alleviate the suffering of animals and families impacted by historic, dangerous flooding, said Kitty Block, president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Quote, this crisis is compounded by the COVID-19 pandemic, and we are honored to be able to make a difference for animals and humans in their time of need. End quote. Those interested in supporting, you know, HSUS because of this, they can go to the Emergency Animal Rescue Fund and donate. You know, HSUS has large trailers with lots of equipment in there to help animals. They have veterinarians. They have these small boats. They have these big trucks. They have lots and lots of equipment that are, you know, they're able to go and do these rescues. So they do need money. And on the other hand, I've been lately, it's been really crazy, but almost every day on my Facebook feed, I get a post about Humane Watch. So Humane Watch is you'll see, you could see it. It's an organization that tells you how bad HSUS is, and that, you know, none of their money goes to save animals, and they don't, you know, care about animals in shelters and things like that. So they're trying to sway people away from HSUS by spewing a lot of lies. And Humane Watch is an organization created by Big Ag, the NRA, and other big corporations with lots of lobbying power and money to stop the work of HSUS, because HSUS is successful in helping animals, whether it's farming animals, whether it's, you know, hunting regulations. You know, they don't want people to go out and just, you know, shoot animals and be trophy hunters, right? I mean, they want to be responsible, right? So this is an organization that does this. So I go back and forth with people, and I just try to explain to them that this is Humane Watch, and this is, you know, all you have to do is follow the money, right? Where the money is.
Tricky name, right?
And it is a tricky name because it just sounds like Humane Watch, like they're watching the animals and taking care of the animals.
Already, they're watching the Humane Society of the United States.
That's Jesus. All that they do. That's
really?
That's their only goal. That's their only goal, is to spew lies about the HSUS. So, you know, I just told you a story about what HSUS is doing and what kind of equipment that they need. All that stuff costs money, you know, just training people to be able to do these water rescues and, you know, fire rescues and tornado rescues and all these different things costs money. The trucks cost money. The trailers cost money. The veterinarians cost money. It's a lot. And we have lawyers all over the United States that go to court and fight every day for animals. And lawyers cost a lot of money. Veterinarians cost a lot of money. It's, you know, it's not.
And the final outcome, too, especially with these fires and, right. and floods, is that people are getting reunited with their relatives, yeah, their being,
their little
their
soul.
Family.
Yeah, it is their family. I mean, anybody who knows and lives with an animal in their house knows that that is a family member. And, you know, if anything happened, you know, if we had a disaster here or a tornado or floods or whatever, I mean, our animals are like my main priority, right? I mean, I would not take one material thing from this house. I wouldn't. I would just take... Robert's looking around like all the things that he would grab. But honestly, I wouldn't. I'd leave everything behind. Maybe grab my wallet because it has my ID in it or whatever. But I don't know. but yes, I would get the animals out.
And most people do. And most people do have pets.
Yes.
And most people understand that. So when you have a group like Humane Watch or whatever the heck they are, it's really disheartening because... Again, that's a gray cloud over humanity.
Yeah. And, you know, what they spew is that HSUS does not help any of their money goes to shelter pets. So, you know, HSUS never claims that they run or organize any shelters, because they don't. That's not what they do. They're not your local Humane Society. And I think that's where the names get really confusing for people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But, yeah, I just want to clear that up because I think there's a lot of misinformation about that. And, yeah.
Maybe you should start a podcast called Humane Watch Watch.
Humane Watch Watch. Maybe I will. You know, I want you to help me do this podcast. So as soon as after I retire, come October 1st, I'm counting the days and hours as it goes. So. Really just keep your pets safe. Have a rescue plan, you know, have, you know, something in your mind that you would do in order to get your animal safe. And, there we go.
Well, Peeny Geeky Wendy for all these great updates that you've been, giving Native Roots Radio on our sacred animal for the past 4 years. I mean, our animals that don't have a voice, you've given a strong voice during these past 4 years on Native Roots Radio.
Thank you, and I appreciate it, and I'd like to continue.
You will.
So don't fire me.
No way. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. We are so pleased to have Heather Keeler on, who's running for Minnesota House 4A, and we try to make her a regular, but she's running for office and has a family and things to do, but we're really excited when we can get Heather on. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me again. I always love to be here. I feel like it has been probably a good 10 days since we've talked, and that feels like too long.
Yeah. Well, you also are a special guest each week on the symposium, so we got to talk to you for a little bit and get updates there. And it's always, I know you're really busy on Sundays, but it's always exciting when you can drop in for a few minutes, because it's very powerful that we can all speak our truths with each other and really bring it across Turtle Island. So I want to say Pinigigi for the capacity that you've given Native Roots Radio and Native Roots Radio Network. I really appreciate that. I want to get to how is the election? How can we help? And then maybe a little update on your family and what's going on. Let's start with the election.
Sure. Well, as many of you know, early voting polls opened yesterday. And I know that in my community, a lot of people were out getting their votes in because, you know, it's such an important year to have our voices be heard. And a lot of people want to do it in a safe and timely fashion. And so for us, a lot of people have driven to the county courthouse and have gone in and have voted. It's really one of the things that I'm hearing back is people are really wishing that they would look at the sample ballot. You know, some of these bigger races that you hear of fairly regularly, you know who you're going to vote for, but it's also really nice to prepare yourself. And so if you can go on and find your sample ballot for your area, you know, sometimes there's judges that are on there or school board members that are on there. And it's nice just to do a little bit of research and go in knowledgeable as you're voting as well. You know, a couple of things here too that we've really been ramping up is our phone banks and just, you know, being really on it when we're making calls and, you know, trying to do some town halls to talk about some of the topics that people really want to hear. It's just been busy every single day, all day.
Wow. Exactly. And you know, it's a race, it's a marathon, but we're getting close to, what is it? 46 days, 47 days, where it's going to be a life changing for you and your district in the state of Minnesota, because I have a good feeling that, you know, there's going to be some Indians down at the down at the Capitol, you know, in St. Paul. And that's exciting to hear, because as you know, I'm an educator, and and I have an all Native homeroom. This year I have 30 Native ninth graders, and it's always powerful for us to see somebody that looks like them in places that normally aren't. So I really just have to give you a real big heartfelt Pinigigi, a thank you for taking this adventure on, and for our people, and for your district too.
Yeah, you know, from the very beginning, I've been saying that representation matters. And a big reason why I was so scared to take this leap is exactly what you're saying. I didn't see people who looked like me in positions like this, but then, you know, the courage set in for me to step up, because I also realized that they weren't making decisions for me either. They weren't making decisions with me in mind, or you in mind, or the kids in mind. And so I really just had to do it. And, you know, I am a mom, and I have kids, and we're going back to school, and I work a full-time job, and, you know, I'm willing to stay up late and do those things because I just feel like, you know, our community needs inclusive decision-making. And our next generation is really relying on it too.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Pinigigi, thanks again. I know you have a little cold, but there's also other things going on with your family. I don't know if you mind sharing that with our audience.
Yeah. So I guess to go back a little bit, I've been saying this whole entire time, I am not going to door knock. I'm doing everything from a distance because I really care about the health of this community and my family, because we are very much in the middle of a pandemic. And unfortunately, that pandemic has affected my family. My oldest son tested positive for COVID a couple days ago, well, about a week and a half ago now. Luckily, he's very low symptoms. It's interesting because he was telling me that he thought he had growing pains, which is very common for him. He grew a foot in 8 months. And so growing pains is something we're really used to. And he had a headache. And then we found out he was in contact with somebody else. And so we went in and got him tested. And he was positive. And then I've been tested and I'm negative. And so just quarantining. And, you know, I think that what I've realized in this and what I've been telling people is, I think we're becoming a little bit complacent in the pandemic. As our numbers ramp up, we actually need to be more aware of it, and we need to talk about it, and we need to make sure that we're staying safe. And, you know, we've always worn masks, but just making sure that we're only going places that we absolutely need to go, that we're being mindful in our shopping trips, that we're getting what we need and coming home. Because yeah, it's not something that is going away, and we just need to be really honest about it. And so this is exactly why I didn't want a door knock, because the worst phone calls in my campaign would have been, hey, I knocked at your door and now I have somebody positive in my family. And instead, I've just chosen to keep my community safe. And I'm really glad I've gone that route. And I'm glad that I've also set the precedent that that's what my campaign is going to be doing as well. So we're on the mend. Luckily, I'm just dealing with the cold, I think, just naturally. We're going to be back at it. And I know that in our community, we're going back to distance learning the end of this month already, because of the cases in our community are on the rise. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's just a reminder to everybody, just be safe and make smart choices and, tell people. I think that's the biggest thing. When we came in contact with it, they didn't really reach out to us right away. And so, DJ went to school and we didn't know that anybody was even being tested or that they got their results. And so it's just really, we have to talk about it. We have to communicate. We have to make sure that we have this community mind frame to keep each other safe.
Yeah, exactly. Those are great words and great words to live by. Luckily in St. Paul here, I am been distance learning the whole time. It's just rough not being able to be in the classroom with the students, because it's all about relationships. They're not going to remember what I taught them. They're going to remember how I treated them. And so it's hard for an old guy like me to not see our students face to face and joke around and have a good time. And one of the things I wanted to bring up too is that you have an ad that just came out, and if anyone wants to see Heather Keeler speak in real time, there's a video on Native Roots Radio, and it's was produced just recently, and it's exciting, and we're pushing it out. And, can you tell us a little bit about the process with the video?
Yeah, it was really fun to do. I actually did it on the campus here at MSUM in Moorhead, because I moved to this community and really got involved through education. And I'm a double alum from MSUM. I got my undergrad and my master's. And so it was kind of fun to just walk around campus and do a commercial. But we just figured that, again, because I'm not at people's doors and just talking over the phone, that we did need to create something that people could see me and hear me and, listen to a little bit of my message. And so that's my first commercial, and I mean, we hope to have more, but it was really exciting, and I really appreciate you sharing it out so that people can maybe just hear me and see me a little bit more, because a lot of voting is about the policies. A lot of it also is just about name recognition and making sure that you're just trusting other people and kind of sharing good messages and sharing it in a good way. So I appreciate you for doing that.
Perfect. Hey, I want, before I let you go, because I know you're busy, I want you to give a quick shout out how we can support, how we can help you, phone bank and things like that all over Turtle Island. So if we could give our audience a quick update on how they can support you in that way.
Sure. Well, everything that I have is Heather for House. So it's Heather, the number 4, House. That's my website. And that's also how you can find me on social media. Honestly, the biggest two things I need right now is phone bankers, because we do phone banks every Wednesday and Sunday. And if you follow my website, we're going to be having a week of action coming up starting the 27th of September, that we're just going to be having things going on all week. The other thing is, because I'm not door knocking, I'm sending a lot of mailers and I'm doing things like these commercials. So donations really help right now to get us through the finish line, even if it's $5, anything really helps. I'm trying to be really frugal with my money, but also these things do take the money and take the effort just to make sure that we're getting out into the homes like we need to. But really, honestly, the support and just encouraging words is really the most powerful piece of all of it.
Awesome. That was Heather Keeler for running for Minnesota for House 4A. That you can get the information at heatherforhouse.com. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Wow, we're really excited and always excited to hear from Nancy Bolio up in the deep north, but especially excited now because of what happened last night or Friday night, I should say. And let's just get right to Nancy and find out what the heck's happened. And Nancy's with Bemidji 350 Rise, and she's a co-producer of Rock the Vote Native Style. So let's hear what's going up in the deep north.
Well, good afternoon, Robert. Thanks for having me. I'm Nancy Bolio. I'm Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, and wear many hats. And yesterday, we had like a 12-hour day, and I'm feeling like I kind of got a rally hangover here, and spent a lot of good energy yesterday. Trump came to town.
Who?
So we had to remind Trump and his Trump supporters that he is not our president and we don't support his hate rhetoric. And we held space in the best way we knew how, right in the middle of everything yesterday in front of the Target store. And about 400 people there. It was like a block party, because big shout out to Dan Jourdain, who's actually running for counselor of Bemidji City Council. Our Bemidji City Council, yeah, Councilor at Large, excuse me. He had a nice sound system, and we had drums. And so we just thought it was a good day to remind Trump and all those people in this county that are so divided by their political mindsets. Because, you know, as we occupy this land, it should be non-political, but just to show up yesterday and remind them that we're still here was one of the most powerful things we've done in a long time. And we held ground in a really good way yesterday, Robert.
Yeah, I saw that too. And it was funny. I saw all the posters, the pictures, and the natives are there rocking the vote native style. That's for sure.
Right. And we also had our native candidates here running for our local offices, Audrey Jourdain, Tim Sumner, and Dan Jourdain give some powerful speeches. And we had a few non-Native allies as well. We had Jeremy Lean running for Minnesota House 2A. We had Reed Olson, who's running for Beltrami County Commissioner here in Bemidji. And Michael Mealhouse as well for Bemidji Mayor. Their comfort zones and stood in solidarity with us yesterday, and that meant so much to us. And we appreciate their time they took for us yesterday, and it couldn't be a better turnout, Robert. It was just powerful and inspiring. Mm-hmm. We also got good words from Thomas X and our elder there from Red Lake, Bob Shemek, and it couldn't be a better day, Robert. I'm still thinking today, wow, it was so powerful. And, you know, there was a lot of negative energy in town because of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They came and harassed us on more than one occasion. But you know what? We still stood there in peace and just kept on going, like, you know what? We're not going to let you bother us, because we reminded our people we're better than all that, and we walk with good hearts and we stand in peace and prayer. And that's what we showed yesterday. And we got some support from the police, actually, because they knew we were starting to get harassed. And so they were actually chasing out the Trump supporters, making them stay away from us. So we did nothing yesterday to cause any trouble. And it just goes to show how the Trump and administration and its followers are creating this hate rhetoric across the United States. So yesterday, what was displayed with Trump and his followers was an act of hate and discrimination, because that's what Trump gives them, is that platform to be ugly people. And you know what? We were beautiful yesterday, and that's what I appreciate about our people and the way we stood.
Right.
Proud.
We need to stand tall, because even when, and I'm saying when, because the numbers in Minnesota look great. I don't think it's ever been a state up for it, up for the blue or red. It's definitely a blue state by all the polls that we're seeing. And we just have to stay diligent even after the election, because who knows? It's been okay to be racist and hateful now, and the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak, so we have to stay really on top of it. And it was cool to see Audrey Thayer out there, too, and she had my T-shirt on, I saw.
Right. And, you know, we actually had those awesome T-shirts that you helped design, that Rock the Vote Native style. And, Robert, if we would have had stacks and we were selling them, we probably could have made some good money yesterday. But, you know, people did donate, and we were fortunate enough to be able to hand some out. And we gave that money forward to, you know, some of the organizations that were part of yesterday. And we helped out Dan Jordan. Excuse me, I have a whiskey voice from yesterday, and I'm caught up here. But yeah, it's like I was trying to rest, and you know, it's really even hard to lay down and rest, you know, after a hard day yesterday, because it still just flutters my heart to know that we found that space yesterday. And like you said, we have to start showing up, and we really need to be diligent and resilient about civic engagement, because if things don't change, this is what we'll be stuck with. And this is why it's important that we rock that vote Native style. And that was part of our theme yesterday, is that we are a collective power. Mm-hmm. And when we don't stand alone, and we can change the face of these political entities that always have this majority vote against us. We just need to, you know, show up and support our candidates, our Native candidates and our non-Native candidates, because that's where change happens. And it starts with us by voting. And on Friday, early voting started, Robert. So
yes,
our people should be starting to vote now.
That's right. Hey, did I see Kathy Wilkie up there too, from South Dakota or North Dakota, I mean?
You know, I'm not familiar with that name, and there was just so many people coming and going. Our estimated count was like 400.
Wow.
But I heard there were good names in the crowd, and we were kind of stretched out along a long stretch of grass, so we didn't always get to connect one-on-one. And
right.
I also
social.
Want to give a big shout out in Indigenous Environmental Network for being there and giving us some media coverage, and just being there and standing in solidarity. They're awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And then you guys were doing with, it's hard too to see who's there, because you're all doing distance social distancing and wearing masks too. So it's always kind of difficult unless you know people personally to see if the who's there and who's not there. But hey, so in the last minute here, we have any updates? That's exciting news. It's just the beginning, I think, with Rock the Vote Native Style and the coalitions that you've put together up in the deep north. So I'm really excited for you and your crew up there. Just good feelings, good thoughts, and standing the ground. I just can't say enough.
Right. And I want to, you know, inform people that Indigenous Day is October 12th. So we're actually starting our organize organization here on a big event in Bemidji, Minnesota. Last year, we were in Clearbrook, which is one of the most hateful towns, Minnesota, and we stood our ground in the most powerful way last year. But as we see, you know, more division happening here in Beltrami County and our words fall on deaf ears, we got the 3-2 majority vote. We're going to build on a powerful event that day. We're going to have some performers, some guest speakers, drums, and we're going to encourage all of our relatives to come here to Bemidji, bring your mask, social distance, and we're going to celebrate who we are and remind this county that we are still here, and we're going to stand tall again that day, Robert.
Wow, what a great way to end it. Thank you, Pinigigi Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350, Rise Coalition, and Rock the Vote. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hare. This beautiful name was given to me by the elder of our family, and that's Uncle Curtis, and it means distant thunder. Welcome, Uncle Curtis.
Aho, Pinigigi Chushke. My name is Moshke Hanajinga. I walk on a white cloud. My colonized name is Curtis West, and I always got to say hi to my baby girl, my lovely wife, Kim, you know, so I say, hello, uh-hoo, baby.
Uh-hoo.
And I want to say, ha-ho, to all my family and relatives and friends in Four Directions. Pray all is well. Praying for all our firefighters out there in Oregon, Cali, and Washington, you know, we pray for them. And I want to say something to all my relatives, too, you know, and we know it, but to stay safe and, you know, mask up and wash your hands, social distancing, you know. And before I get started here, you know, with birthdays and shout outs and events that my Tuesday lets me do, we'd like to say rest in paradise to RBG, our Supreme Court justice that walked on. So we want to say that much. And then, like I said, my Tuesday lets cuts me loose on some things. So I'm going to start out with some birthdays. We want to say a happy birthday to a real relative, or I'm really proud of her. She's a real good one, man. Somewhere down in New Mexico. So Allie West, happy birthday. And another one we want to give a happy birthday to is Amber Reed. And this buddy of mine that listens to us, and he votes for Blue and Biden follower, and he listens to us all the way down in Arizona. His name's Ernie Flores. I played football with him in high school, so I want to give him a happy birthday shout out. And
Was that with leather helmets back then, or
leather helmets and no face mask? And cardboard shoulder pads. So yeah, it was back in the old days, man. Fred Flintstone was our running back. So we're gonna, that's too much information on how old I am. But and then a happy birthday shout out to a relative of ours that helped out with my nanny, my mother's services and stuff. We're gonna say happy birthday out to Shannon Rave. You know, he's a veteran, and ran into him at the general counsel last year again. It was good to see Shannon. But happy birthday, Shannon. And another birthday shout out that Native Roots is going to give to a friend of the radio show is Linda Thompson. Yes. A happy shout out birthday to her. And another elders' birthdays. You know, like we say, the elders are very important to us, you know, and like I always say, look after with this pandemic, look out after them, call them, you know, social distance is fine, but you can give them a phone call and see if they need anything, any groceries, anything, you know, whatever they need, look after them, you know. So we're going to say that much before I start shouting out. And happy birthday to these elders, Georgia Lone Tree, Kevin Bad Boy. Another one of my favorites, and it's coming up, is Libby Fairchild. So I want to say happy birthday to you, Libby. I know you're listening, Doc.
We got to have her on the show sometime.
I know. She's a good one, man. And another one down there. Down there in God's country is John Dahl and Rosemarie Paulus and Deborah Pettibone. And we had a special birthday shout out. And I'm a humble person. And my brother Carson, my brother Haga, told me to give a birthday shout out to his favorite elder, to Curtis West. So I'm going to do that for him.
Hey.
I'm not going to tell you how old he is going to be, but Yeah, so I didn't want to do that.
39, right? Isn't he going to be 39?
39 going on 109. But anyhow, but he wanted me to say it. I told him I didn't want to do it, but I want to do that, man. But so I'm going to go into some shout-outs. This one is from our roving reporter, Jerry Ogunas, the Wabbit. He wanted to give me this announcement, and he put the phone on to the Frank from American Indian Movement. He wanted me to make this announcement on there, and the name of Franklin Avenue will be changed to Clyde Belcourt Avenue from 11th to Cedar Avenue. Initial date set for the changing of the name will be set up, and thank you. Thank you for to Frank for letting me know that. It was breaking news from the our roving reporter, Augie. So they're going to change that from 11th to Cedar. It's going to be Clyde Belcourt Avenue.
Wow.
So I want to pass that news on to you. And then, like I said, I want to thank Frank, Lisa, and, you know, I want to thank them all over there, and Clyde especially, you know, and I got that news, breaking news, and I wanted to pass it on to Native Roots Radio listeners. And so I want to thank them guys. And so I want to thank that that roving reporter, Jerry Ogunas, so for that info. So anyway, other thing that they wanted to pass on was Red Lake Nation had a great turnout. I had lots of applications for that new rental property. So I want to thank the Red Lake Nation staff over at the embassy. So I want to say that much, too. And the other thing I was going to ask, I'm not going to bring this up because I'll ask Tuske after, but there's a thing that I wanted to tell you is that very important to get out and vote. And please get out and fill out that census. It's very important. And most importantly is that Native vote, you know. So another shout out I wanted to give out to before I get, I want to say happy anniversary down all the way. We're sending smoke signals all the way down to Winnebago, Nebraska. I want to say a happy anniversary to Greg and Janet Bass. 49 years of blessed marriage, and they're so so much in love from day one to and forever. You know, so we're going to say that much on that. And the other thing we want to do, and we're going to go into events, but I want to say something first off is that we want to give a shout out to Heather Keeler and Heather for House. We want to shout out to Sharice David. We want to shout out to Trisha Zunker. So we want to say that much too. And I'm going to let Chuske let you know about some events that are real important. And I want to have him pass it on. I have a couple after he goes through it. Okay.
Peeny Geegee, Uncle Curtis. Hey, I just want to remind everyone that we're so happy that you guys are supporting us through Patreon. That's Patreon Native Roots Radio Network. And please, anything helps. And we really want to give a shout out to the people that have been donating. Also, we have Rock the Boat Native Style on Tuesdays at 2 to 3 p.m. We have Native guests and Native artists and Native politicians on. And then Pilots Progressive Party. And then we have, of course, you're listening to Native Roots Radio, and then we have the weekly symposium that's live on Facebook, and then also rebroadcast on AM 950 from 6 to 8, and then we're also live 7:30 to 9:30. Back to you, Uncle Curtis.
Aho, Pina Gigi Chuske. Yeah, we got one thing, an announcement that they wanted to see if we could put on the radio. There's this place in Eagan, Minnesota. It's called Open Door. It's a food shelf, and look online for the address and everything, and you can drive up service, and they said everybody's available for that, and they look forward to helping out, and they wanted to do that. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is my fundraiser for my birthday. It's for the Minnesota Native Women's Sexual Coalition, Assault Coalition, and that's coming on right now, so it's a good cause. And the other thing we wanted to bring up too is coming up on Tuesday, September 22nd at 1 p.m. Seeds of Resistance, Indigenous Led Rights of Nature on Turtle Island online. Register on Zoom. Five Native American tribes have recognized rights of nature. So please to register on Zoom to participate or tune in to listen.
Right on. Hey, do you have a Native wisdom or a gaga today?
Yes, I do. And I think this one came in really nice today. It's a Native wisdom. It says, "A wisdom and peace come when you start living. the life the Creator intended for you.
Oh, who? Pini Gigi. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests, which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.